plantations. Slate met my mother in an opium den.
Ah. Not like that. Well, not her.
Lean worked there. She never touched it except to make up pipes. Made sure he stopped, too. I wish I knew how she'd done it. I tried to smile, but it came out twisted. I suppose if he has his way, I'll be able to ask her.
So that's why he wanted the bird.
The bird is strong medicine, but she died from an infection. Penicillin would likely have worked just as well. Kashmir's brow was furrowed, and behind his eyes, questions were forming.
Then why didn't he bring her some?
Slate was at sea. He didn't even know she was expecting. I sighed. I'd had to ask Rotgut to tell me the whole story. Slate refused to talk about it. He needed money so they could get married and live happily ever after in paradise. And he had a map of Hong Kong in 1850, and the next edition of the Honolulu map from 1869. So he went to China to smuggle back some opium to sell. He sailed out in early 1868, and by the time he came back in 1869, I was there, and my mother was not.
And so he's looking for a map of 1868 to save her.
Kashmir had his hand on his chin, and his eyes were far away.
But can he actually change the past?
We do it every time we navigate, I said. The watch you took, or the tigers?
A pocket watch is not a person, Amira.
He searched my face for answers.
If he succeeds, what happens to the years between then and now?
I don't know, Kash. That's the trouble. Some people think that reality would split into two versions, or that it already has split, and I just don't know it. But others think that if the past has changed, I might just... I spread my hands, and we both considered the empty space between them.
What people? Other navigators?
Ha, no. Physicists. I've never met another navigator aside from Slate, and he won't tell me anything. Kashmir leaned against the wall next to me, and we watched the yellow cabs crawl by. Finally, he shook his head.
No, he won't do it. He may dream about seeing her again, but he would never actually risk it.
You think so well of him. In spite of myself, I attempted a smile. This isn't the first map he's tried. Kash stared at me. I'd never seen him so nonplussed.
When?
More often when I was younger. I shrugged, trying to hide my fear, swallowing down the terror, clawing up my throat. Most of the maps he'd found were worthless. One was even run off a Xerox. But the last time was almost 3 years ago, maybe 6 months before you came aboard. It was an Asher and Adams map he bought from a collector in Tahiti. He was so excited. I tried to ask him exactly what would happen to me if the map worked. But he only said to trust him. I tried to, but... how to explain the doubts, the maddening uncertainty of those terrible hours? The memory was a jumble of dark, disconnected moments like flotsam in a vast sea of dread, and the words turned to sand in my mouth. Thank God the map had failed, but despair had lifted off my shoulders and settled like a vulture onto Slate's. We'd spent months in the doldrums of my father's depression, drifting in the Pacific where the ocean was thick with whales and white sharks. I'd leave trays of food outside his door, which was where Slate left them as well. Eventually, he had emerged from the room, thin and pale as a bone under his tattoos, dark blue bruises under his eyes, and in the crooks of his arms. He had devoured a huge plate of food, vomited over the rail, and fallen asleep on a pile of rope rigging. When he woke up the next day, he took the wheel again and never said a word about any of it. Which was fine by me. There is something terrifying about seeing someone strong standing on the edge of the abyss. like a ship on the lip of a whirlpool, where the whole sea plunges into the maw of Charybdis. There is that moment when they reach out, like a drowning man will, and if you're within reach, they will pull you down with them. I didn't want to stand there beside him. I didn't want to be dragged down. In the 3 years since, I'd let myself hope we'd run out of maps from the era, that I was safe, that the captain had finally put the past behind him. But here we were again, and Slate wasn't even trying to swim against the current. In fact...
But what?
I looked up at Cash, tasting copper. I'd been chewing my lip. He doesn't have any idea what will happen to me, and I don't think it matters to him either way. Amira. His expression was mixed, sympathy and disgust, and I couldn't bear it. I was almost relieved when the captain emerged from the auction house. He started toward us, but Kashmir gripped my arm, whispering fiercely in my ear.
Why do you help him?
I watched my father swinging his briefcase and grinning ear to ear, his joy visible, so rare and effervescent as fine champagne. How can I say no, Kash? I murmured. She's dead because of me. And then Slate was there, clapping his hands together, the color high in his cheeks, and for a moment I glimpsed what my mother must have when she fell in love. Slate was as picturesque as any ruin. You look happy, I said. I couldn't help it. Like an old wound, it itched.
Oh, yes, Nixie, yes, I am indeed. I am not disappointed. I never am when I come to New York. I love New York.
He shouted, spreading his arms wide. Passers-by watched bemused. Kashmir watched him, too, his face troubled. Me too. My eyes went to the briefcase. Is it in there?
Oh, no, 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 no. They'll put it in a padded box and deliver it to the ship in... Pardon me,
he said, turning to a woman and lifting her wrist before she could protest.
May I see your watch? Thank you. 4 hours.
He released the woman, who jerked back her arm and hurried away.
4 hours.
He tossed down his briefcase and wrapped his arms around my and Kashmir's shoulders.
I can hardly wait.
He released us, but made no move to pick up the briefcase. I nudged it with my foot. It's empty, then? You bid everything you had?
Nixie, he said with mock disappointment. Nixie, Nixie, Nixie. Did you think I wouldn't be able to keep a little something back?
He knelt before the briefcase, flipped open the latches, and revealed a thick stack of bundled 20s.
See? Your mother taught me how to haggle.
He was in a very good mood, then, to mention my mother. His eyes were bright with manic excitement. How long would it last? Jesus, Dad, I said as people stared. Someone will rob you. The captain laughed.
Yeah.
He jerked his chin toward Cash.
Him.
He grabbed the wad of bills and split off a handful.
You know what? Here. This is for you. This is for you.
He stuffed 20s into our fists without counting them.
And the rest is for Bee and Rotgut.
I held the money in both hands. It must have been nearly $500. Does this mean we have shore leave? Slate stopped in the process of unknotting his tie.
Shore leave? What for?
To spend this. I grinned at Cash. It was only a brief reprieve, but it was something. There's an exhibit opening this weekend at the Met about the Book of the Dead, or a talk tomorrow night about pre-Christianity in Armenia that...
Oh, Nixie, no.
The captain shook his head and threw his tie into the briefcase.
There's no time for all that. We're leaving in the morning.
Well, how about a bookstore, then? Just for the afternoon?
We've still got to manage the deliveries, but if you see something quick between here and the ship...
I stared at him. The money crumpling in my clenched fist.
although it wasn't about the money, really. The one thing I could never buy was more time.
Forget it, I said, shoving the worthless bills into my bag. The newspaper Cash had given me was more valuable. Let's just go. The euphoria in his eyes dimmed, but only for a moment.
Eager to be underway? That's my girl.
The cheer in his voice was forced, but he hugged me with both arms and lifted me up off the ground.
Dad!
But I let myself hold him too, as tightly as I could. He let me down, staring at me for a moment, his eyes brimming. Then he made a beeline over to a man selling roasted nuts out of a cart. He bought half a dozen bags, dumping one into his mouth and chewing fiercely while stuffing the others into the pockets of his suit. Christie sent the map to the ship by car. When the sleek Lincoln rolled up to the docks that evening, Slate, who had been pacing on deck like a cat in a cage, went entirely still. B signed the release form, and she and Kashmir carried the crate up to his cabin, all while Slate watched, nothing moving but his eyes. Only when they set it down outside the door did he spring into motion and tug the crate inside, letting the door swing shut behind him. I winced when the door slammed, but the silence of his absence seemed louder still. It shouldn't have. Since our embrace on the sidewalk, I'd seen him slipping away into his head, into his plans for tomorrow and all the rest of the future. Grand dreams of what might come from his newest treasure map. But perhaps naive hope runs in my blood. B cleared her throat. I'd been staring at the closed door. She came over to stand beside me as I leaned on the rail, and side by side we watched the western sun wash the towers of Manhattan.
"This is the better view," she said.
Her voice was soft, a raspy whisper because of the scar that lay like a noose around her throat. "Agreed." The city shone across the river, a temptation all its own, but it might as well have been an ocean away. "I just wish we had more time here."
"Us too. Hyun loved the lights," she said. "But I love the bull."
"The brass bull? On Wall Street?"
"Yes. He reminds me of my song bull, although he grazes on a different green."
I laughed, and she tapped the cowbell at her belt.
"Sometimes I miss my herd."
"Does Hyun?" Bee grinned, and the scars on her cheeks, like rows of pearls, curved with particular mischief.
"She misses the dancing. She says there's a warehouse party in Red Hook tonight. House music. What is house music?" She tried to explain, but I've never heard anyone play a house.
Bee shook her head dramatically, but she winked at me. I couldn't help but smile back. B was Na'ath from a tribe in northern Africa, where cattle were both kith and currency. Ayan was her wife, who'd been killed years ago, before B had come to the ship. But in accordance with their beliefs about death, Ayan was still with her, doing those little annoying things ghost wives do, like make you drop your breakfast or trip over a coil of rope. Or bother you about going to warehouse parties in Brooklyn. Admit it, you would take her to the party if we weren't sailing at dawn.
The worst part is, she already knows it.
Well, there's not much dancing on this ship, I suppose. My eyes returned to the captain's door. Do you wish you could go back?
Back where?
To Sudan. To before Ayan died.
Such an odd idea. We were already there.
She stroked the necklace of her scar.
He does not think before he acts. Would you like me to burn it?
To what?
The map. I should have done it with the last one, but the idea came to me too late. Ach!
She flicked her hand over her shoulder as though a fly had buzzed her ear.
Yes, yes. To be honest, it was Ian's idea, but I would gladly do it.
Burn it. For a moment, my heart leaped at the idea, and I was shocked I hadn't thought of it before. It would be so easy. Then I bit my cheek, ashamed. I had already taken her away from him once. No, no, but thank you. Thank you. I'm certain the map won't work, I lied. None of them have.
Ah, well, good. Otherwise, I imagine you might worry.
Downtown, a glass monolith seemed to blaze, catching the slanting sun as it crept toward the sea. She waited for a response, but I made none. Finally, Bee dropped her hand onto my shoulder for a moment, then let it fall away.
I'm going to go organize the deliveries. You come too.
Bee recommended hard work as a cure for any emotional turmoil. I followed her down into the hold, which still smelled of tigers, although the cages had been replaced by a handful of boxes scattered haphazardly. Instant coffee. My father lived on the stuff. A crate of toilet paper, aspirin and iodine and antibiotics, bleach and bamboo toothbrushes and toothpaste with fluoride. We broke down the cardboard boxes and repacked their contents in the wooden chests we kept for the purpose. Then we piled all the crates against one wall and scrubbed the hold till the teak gleamed. Bee was polishing the floor with beeswax when a box of vitamins tumbled down from the top of the pile. She scolded Ian under her breath. The faint smell of honey filled the air. By the time we finished, I did feel better, and hungry. Must be nearly dinner. I pushed my fists into the small of my back. The hatch framed a sky tinged with pink.
"Or past it," she said. "It gets dark late here in summer."
At the mention of summer, she smiled like she couldn't help it. "What did you do?" I asked, but I didn't bother to wait for her answer. She followed after me as I raced upstairs to the deck. Cash and Rotgut had been just as busy as we had. A table was laid on the deck, and on the table, all the culinary delights New York had to offer. Pungent halal chicken and rice doused in hot sauce, pork dumplings and styrofoam clamshells, a cardboard box marked DeFera's Pizza, pastrami sandwiches thick as dictionaries, creamy cheesecake covered with glistening scarlet strawberries. Kashmir flung his arms wide.
"Happy Theft Day!" "Glad we stole you," Rotgut added, raising a bottle of Brooklyn Lager in his bony fist.
I cast my eyes about, but it was only the four of us on deck. I lifted my chin as Kashmir patted the seat beside him, the one with its back toward the captain's cabin. We dined like New Yorkers on the deck, while Manhattan's skyline shimmered in the water like the Milky Way, and my father shut himself in the map room, conspicuous by his absence. Chapter 5. After the party, Bee watched while I made up an extra plate of food, but she didn't say anything. There was no answer when I knocked on the captain's door, but it was unlocked, so I let myself in. The light was dim. He'd thrown bits of fabric over the lamps, and the room was stuffy, the heat raising the vanillin scent of old paper from the maps spilling from the shelves and cupboards lining the walls. Slate hoarded maps like a dragon hoards treasure. Maps of every shape and shore, in parchment and paper, birch bark and Nile linen, kangaroo leather and sharkskin. There were maps punched in copper, painted on urns, and one scratched into the surface of a shelf mushroom. He even had Robert Peary's 1906 map of Crockerland, a continent that enjoyed a scant 7 years of existence before being judged a Fata Morgana. After 1914, it no longer existed on any map, nor anywhere else at all. I needed air. I set the plate on the table and crossed the room, stumbling on a pile of books, to open the aft deadlights. The breeze ruffled the edges of the black curtains of the sleeping alcove,
Captain dozed behind them, his newest map resting on his chest like a blanket. I clenched my fists to keep from snatching it away. Instead, I went to the drafting table where the map of 1981 lay, pinned down by half-empty coffee cups. I took the cloth off the lamp above the desk and leaned over the page, looking closely at the lines. The cartographer's focus had been delineating New York neighborhoods, with each shaded in different watercolor and detailed down to major landmarks. I drummed my fingers on the table. Still, to my eye, there were no hints this map wouldn't work. Frustrated, I rolled up the map and shoved it into the cupboard with all the other dead-enders. The rest of his Hawaii 1868 maps were there. There was no reason for me to worry that the new map would be different. I licked my lips and tasted salt. No reason at all. I closed the cupboard more noisily than necessary, but the captain didn't even move. Since I'd started cleaning, I kept going. I picked up the books, myths, legends, history, scattered around the room like confetti, and returned them to their shelves. The dirty clothes I threw in the empty hamper. The Caladrius's cage was on the trunk. I filled a cup with water for her. The bed sheets had spilled into a tangled pile on the floor. When I picked them up, I uncovered the box, lying open, displaying Slate's most precious things. A block of black tar, a stained pipe and fresh needles, a bottle of pills, all nestled beside the map of 1866. The map of the time before I came along, and everything went wrong. I kicked the whole mess back under the bed, hard enough it hit the wall. My palms were damp. I wiped my hands on the bundle of bedding and let it drop back to the floor. Then I took a deep breath to clear my head. The breeze off the ocean, cooler now the sun was down, had swept away the musty smell in the room. But Slate still hadn't stirred except for the gentle rise and fall of his chest under the 1868 map. I could no longer contain myself. I took one corner between my thumb and forefinger, lifting it gently away. And he started awake, his hands closing reflexively on the edges. "I'm going to put it on the table," I said. His eyes focused on mine, and he released the map, trading it for the plate I'd brought. I glanced at the page, and my heart sank. It was nothing like the others. Inked, faded, signed, dated. A. Sutphen, the drafter, had printed in neat block letters and drawn in a very precise hand. And the map was original. But even that was no guarantee it would work. Suddenly, I was absurdly grateful for the inexplicable failure of the 1981 New York.
"It's a good map, isn't it?"
I looked up at him. Slate was balancing the plate, untouched, on his knees, waiting for me to agree. I dropped my eyes back to the page and chewed on my lip. "I hope it's worth what it cost."
"It is priceless, Nix."
"Right. Not a crease, nor even a crinkle. Someone had preserved this map quite well."
"Thank you,"
Slate said then. That gave me pause. "For what?"
"For the map."
He picked up the fork.
"And for dinner."
I pursed my lips. Why had I been surprised? He could afford to be kind now he had what he wanted. "Of course, Captain." My voice was vague as I studied the map. It was only the island of Oahu, and in fine detail. Beautiful lines. His duty done, he stabbed a dumpling with a fork.
"This is good."
"Good." My eyes roved over the contours on the page, seeking flaws and finding none. The mapmaker had even labeled Honolulu's main streets, Nuuanu, Bertania, King, as well as the post office and the major churches. The city was centered around Iolani Palace, the seat of the King of Hawaii. There, just a few blocks northwest, was Chinatown. I ground my teeth.
"You know," he said, his mouth full, "the last time I had a pastrami sandwich from Katz's was when I was your age.
This is from Katz's, isn't it?
Yeah.
Why so quiet?
But then his face fell, and his fork paused in midair. For a long time, neither of us spoke. He put down his fork and squeezed his eyes shut.
There was a party.
I shrugged as if I didn't care. It's fine.
I'm sorry, Nixie.
I don't want to talk about it, Captain.
Kashmir told me, but I forgot.
I can see that.
I said I was sorry.
He threw his hands up, suddenly defensive. Then he clenched his fist and brought it in front of his mouth.
And I am,
he added quickly.
I was distracted is all. The map is very distracting.
He set the plate aside and smiled hopefully.
But it's beautiful, isn't it? And it's almost like a gift.
A gift?
To you.
I couldn't help it. My lips twisted like a juiced lime, and the response was too bitter not to spit out. To me?
Well, don't you want to meet your mother?
His question seemed designed to induce guilt, and it cut deep enough to reveal a splinter of cruelty, hard as bone. My mother's gone, Slate. I put the map down on the drafting table, smoothing it with my palm. On the map I came from, she's dead. Slate blanched, but he answered evenly.
That's why we've got a new map.
A new map. A new version. I traced the line of the Tropic of Cancer. A new wife?
What are you talking about?
I've been thinking about it. The map where you met is the map where she died. A different map means a different version of her. And of me, but I did not bother saying it. I doubted it would matter to him. He stood, arms crossed, drumming the fingers of his right hand on his left arm.
It's the exact same place.
So? I opened one of the cupboards, the fairy tale maps, and unrolled one at random. Greece with gods on Mount Olympus, Slate. And here, I pulled out the map right beneath it. 200 years later, the next cartographer replaced Zeus with Jupiter. And then we have, I opened another cupboard, the less fanciful histories, and pawed through them. Mount Olympus during the Ottoman Empire, where you'll find brigands and highway robbers and no gods at all. I let the map roll itself up. Going back to the same place doesn't mean you'll find the same thing.
It does if it's the same time.
I smiled grimly as he started to pace. A perverse part of me was enjoying myself. Remember where we found Kashmir? That French map of Persia in 1740, in the Wadi al-Mas. But here, a historical map of Nadir Shah's empire, 1740. Look, I said, pointing. Same place, same time, but there's no such city. The shoreline's different. Do you think Kashmir exists there, somewhere in the middle of the Persian Gulf?
Those are two completely different map makers. You can't compare some Frenchman's fantasy of Arabia to Mitchell and Sutphen are two different map makers. But they were mapping the same version of Hawaii.
Which version? My history or your fairy tale?
It is not a fairy tale.
The volume of his voice brought me up short. His eyes were wild. I could see the whites all the way around, and suddenly none of it was amusing. And if you succeed, I said softly, then what?
What do you mean, then what?
I opened my mouth, then closed it. In Sanskrit mythos, they say breath is life, and I didn't want to give life to my fears. I didn't want to say it aloud. Then what will happen to me? After our shouting, the silence rang in my ears. He took a deep breath, then another.
Then we all live happily ever after,
he said finally, calm once more.
You've done a lot of studying, Nix, and you know the maps. But I know what I believe, and that's all that really matters.
My breath hitched in my throat to hear it stated so plainly. Good to know how insignificant my thoughts are to you, I said bitterly.
That's not what I meant.
He reached out an uncertain hand, as though I was a bird in the bush. But he let the hand fall back to his lap and cupped it in the other, squeezing until his knuckles cracked.
If I tell you a secret, will you feel better?
I rolled my eyes. I'm not 12, Captain.
It's about navigation.
That brought me up short, and my anger dissipated like mist under the sun. I had asked so many times, why now? Was it gratitude or guilt? Certainly it was the only gift I wanted from him. But it didn't matter. I wasn't about to question it. I found my voice. What? What is it? He turned back to his bed and stared for a moment at the plate he'd left there. Then he broke a piece of bread off the sandwich and put it into the Caladrius's cage. She cocked her head shyly on her slender neck before dipping it down, delicate and precise, to eat from his hand. A winch in my gut wound tighter, but I was afraid if I asked again, he'd change his mind.
Navigation is not just about the maps,
he said finally, as though to the bird.
Part of it is belief.
Belief? My mind was racing. What do you mean? He brushed the crumbs from his palms and sat back down on his bed.
I've never been able to get to a place I didn't believe existed. Doubt can stop a map from working.
The edge of the Sutphen had started to curl. I ran my finger down the side. So, you believe this map will work. That's no secret.
If belief affects whether a map works, I'd think belief also affects what you find there.
You think or you know?
Fine, I know.
He scrubbed his hands through his hair.
I know she'll be there, and I know everything will work out.
How can you be sure?
It's fate.
He looked at me. No, through me, as though just behind me was his future.
It's inevitable.
I ground my teeth, feeling tricked. This isn't about navigation. It's about delusion. Disappointment was bitter on my tongue, but he didn't flinch in the face of my scorn. Another breeze purled through the room, and I shivered. I suppose if you're going to see Leon again, we might as well throw all that overboard. I flicked my hand toward the box under the bed. You know she would hate to see it. His eyes refocused, and he met my stare with a steady gaze. But the silence stretched between us like a rope about to snap. Was that doubt? I turned my face so he wouldn't see my expression. But when my eyes fell on the Sutphen map, my smug smile wilted. I wanted the map to fail. But why take joy in tormenting him? At heart, all he wanted was an escape, and that I understood, only too well. Tell me more about navigating, I said then, too eagerly, breathless at the thought of freedom. Slate laughed a little.
Why should I?
Because I asked. He laughed again, louder, and I stiffened. Please? He did not answer me. He was so quiet, I couldn't even hear him breathing. Finally, I faced him. He was watching me, and his expression was serious.
Why, Nixie?
He asked again, but it was clear he already knew. Still, I did not answer. If I told him the truth, that I would leave him behind and never look back, that I longed to go anywhere and everywhere he was not, he would argue. Worse, if I confirmed it, he would never teach me. Because I helped you, I said at last. He made a face.
We don't strike bargains, Nixie, not between you and me. We don't haggle over things.
I clenched my jaw. I'll try to remember that the next time you ask for money to buy a map.
This is a good map, Nixie,
he said, stabbing another dumpling.
There won't be a next time.
Chapter 6. I went back outside, leaving Slate to his dinner. There was no sign now of the party. The deck was clear for tomorrow. I leaned on the rail, staring without seeing at the cars moving along the Brooklyn Queens Expressway. The warmth of the day had long faded, and the night air was quite cool. The haze gave the headlights halos. I pressed my thumb between my brows. I already regretted arguing with the captain. What had been the point? He was certain, he said he was, and nothing I could say would turn him from his tack. At least I'd gotten something out of it. It was a small thing, one bright minnow in a school. But the captain had always been tight-lipped about navigation. Now I knew why. Had he finally discovered the map I'd taken? No. He could have guessed I'd want to strike out on my own someday. Besides, he didn't know his collection well enough to notice one map missing. I'd tucked it away in my cabin at the bottom of my sea chest, along with my entire life savings, $642 after today. The map was small, fragile, the color of tea. Carthage during Roman rule, 165 AD. There, white salt, so cheap in modern America, could be traded for gold or jewels, or a small, fast ship of my own. Slate had so many maps of his past, why shouldn't I have a map of my future? I couldn't spend my life stuck on my father's ship, tossed by his tempestuous moods, waiting for the day when he managed to steer us directly onto the rocky shore where his siren sang. I wanted my freedom, even though it likely meant never seeing the rest of the crew again. Once I knew how to navigate, nothing could keep me aboard the Temptation. Then I heard bare feet on the deck behind me, and the silver sound of tiny ankle bells. I like it when you don't try to sneak up on me.
I know, Cash said, coming to stand beside me. You're up late.
It's my watch.
Ah, well, then you won't mind if I borrow your hammock?
He held up the bundled canvas and raised an eyebrow. I had a room, of course, below decks. We all did. There was plenty of room on the Temptation that on any other ship would be taken up by a larger crew, or a motor, or any number of things in any number of eras. Still, I preferred to sleep on deck on nice nights. My room was too empty to lend itself to easy dreams. This was in sharp contrast to the rest of the crew, who filled their rooms to bursting with relics or reminders of their lives before they'd come aboard. Locks of hair and curved bullhorns, baskets, bells, begging bowls. I hadn't really had a life to bring with me. We strung the hammock between the mast and the rail. Kashmir bowed graciously.
After you?
He waited till I'd settled in, cross-legged, before climbing in to sit facing me. The hammock barely swung. He was a natural acrobat. The Englishman in Calcutta had never stood a chance of catching him. He must have seen it in my face, the admiration, and he put his hands behind his head, feigning a stretch, giving me a smug look. I rolled my eyes. You're blocking the view.
I am the view, Amira,
he said, framing himself with his hands, his crisp linen shirt, his careless hair, then laughed. After a moment, though, his humor faded a bit, as did mine.
I'm sorry you'll miss your talk about Armenia.
Well, thanks to you, I did have a chance to learn something interesting. I pulled a newspaper clipping out of my pocket, an article from the paper he'd stolen for me. Island undiscovered. Sandy Island. A little dot we have on an 1850s whaling map of Australia. Up until the other day, you could see it on Google Maps, too, but it didn't come up on satellite view. A bunch of scientists tried to visit, and they couldn't find it, so Google erased it. He frowned.
What happened to it?
It might have been an atoll finally covered by the sea. Or maybe it was a myth in someone's cosmology. Either way, it's gone now.
Ah, well, nothing lasts forever.
I kicked him, making the hammock sway. That's very glib. We have shelves full of maps of places that only used to exist. Everything unique is vanishing.
The age of exploration is long over, Amira. Now it's the age of globalization. And once everyone agrees something is one way, all the other ways it could have been disappear.
I folded the slip of paper back into a neat little square, the ink smudging my fingers. I wish we didn't all have to agree.
We don't. You yourself are very disagreeable, he said, still grinning. Don't worry, I still love you. Which reminds me.
He reached into his shirt pocket and drew out a slender silver chain, upon which dangled a black pearl set like a bud between two leaves of filigreed silver. He held it up before my eyes, like a hypnotist's pendulum.
Oh, no. Oh, yes. Did you think your only gift from me would be a second-hand newspaper?
It's not like you paid for either of them.
How do you know? I had all that money from the captain.
Because I wasn't born yesterday.
Doesn't that depend on the map?
I made a face, and he laughed.
Come, Amira. Yesterday you were glad I was a thief.
I folded my arms. I know, but still.
A compelling retort. Then again, if I weren't a thief, we'd never have met.
Good point, I said finally, smiling. Although maybe more for my side than yours. Kashmir had come running to the temptation, a skinny stowaway from a fantastical city in the Wadi al-Mas, where snakes the size of the mainmast slithered through a carpet of diamonds the size of plums. I'd been on watch the night he'd clambered aboard and pressed behind the bulwark. He'd only had enough time to meet my eyes and put his finger to his lips before a troop of guards came trotting down the street in stiff formation, their shamshir glinting in the light of the sickle-shaped moon. When the captain of the guard glanced my way, I pointed down the street. I should have guessed Kashmir would become a nuisance, and a bad influence. But most importantly, a friend. And all in the last 2 years, in times and places I'd never have visited had my history been different. Slate himself had warned me a few days after he'd learned about our newest crew member.
He wasn't always here, and he won't be here forever.
I swallowed, my throat suddenly dry at the memory. My father only had 2 years with Lien. Would it be worse to lose Kashmir, or never to have known him? For a moment, I pitied Slate, as much as I resented him. The necklace blurred in my vision, and I blinked rapidly. Then I held out my hand, and Kashmir dropped the pearl into it, the chain pooling like mercury in my palm. Who had he stolen it from? Did she know it'd been taken, or did she think it was only lost? It would soon join the rest of my growing collection, a gold bracelet, ruby earrings, even a thick platinum band too big to fit any of my fingers. I never wore the stuff, but Cash took any excuse to give me stolen jewelry. He didn't seem to care that I didn't enjoy acquiring it half so well as he did, and it tickled him to take theft day literally.
Thanks, Cash.
He waved my words away.
It's nothing. Besides, he added with a grimace and a nod toward the captain's cabin, I can see you've already got a seagull around your neck.
The saying is albatross, I sighed, and this particular albatross is an inheritance from my mother, a family heirloom.
Heavy burden to bear. Makes me glad I never had a family.
The breeze ran its fingers through my hair. I twisted my curls together and knotted them at the nape of my neck. You didn't leave anyone behind when you ran? A secret smile in his eyes didn't reach his lips.
No one who would miss me. Not like you, if you go.
I snorted. You give the captain more credit than he deserves. Now the smile appeared.
I wasn't talking about him.
He winked outrageously. I laughed. Then Cash reached over to tuck an errant strand of hair behind my ear. The hammock swayed gently, or was it the ship? Behind us, the city sparkled with lights, reflected in the black water.
"You've never been a little curious," he said, "about where you're from?"
"I'm not from Hawaii. I was just born there. And even if I was curious, I wouldn't want to be stuck there forever. There are so many other places to see."
"Well," he said then, straightening, "seeing as how you're saving up to run away, shall I take that trinket to your room and throw it on the pile?"
He held out his hand. His joke hit too close to home. Who said anything about me running away? But I thought again of my map of Rome and my little stack of bills hidden at the bottom of my trunk, the first place anyone would look. I glared at him. "I wish you'd stay out of my room."
"That's a funny joke, princess, when you're talking to a thief."
"Not a very good one, if you give away all your loot."
"I enjoy it too much to stop."
"Stealing jewelry from people in port?"
"Bringing you treasures you care nothing for."
He spoke lightly, but his words were too flippant, and behind his eyes was something I recognized. Loneliness. The moment stretched. "I do," I said finally. "I do care." I looked at the necklace, glimmering in his palm, and saw it with new eyes. In all our scrambling for money, I'd never once considered selling off the jewelry he'd stolen from me. "Here." I bowed my head and lifted my hair out of the way. Kashmir hesitated before he leaned in, his nimble hands darting around my throat and attaching the clasp at the nape of my neck. His breath smelled of cloves, and his fingers were warm. I bit my lip, trying to remember the Persian phrase I'd found in an Iranian guidebook and tucked away in my head for a moment like this. "Takashor." He laughed, showing his white teeth.
"Tashakor," he repeated.
"That's what I said."
"No, it's not."
I pursed my lips. "All right, let me try again. Thank you, my friend." I reiterated, this time in my own language. I put my hand to the pearl. "It's beautiful."
"As are you, Amira,"
he said, putting his hand over mine. And we both smiled like it didn't mean anything. The next morning, we left the harbor and returned down the upper bay, our sails glowing like paper lanterns in the sun. We passed the buoys at the mouth of the river and skimmed the foamy waves of the green Atlantic as my fears approached and circled like sharks. Not a cloud marred the sky, and the horizon was clear. Soon the coast of Long Island was a distant rim on a bowl of mazarine blue. Bee had her hand lightly on the wheel, and Rotgut sat in the crow's nest, his feet swinging like a child's in a big chair. I leaned over the rail at the bow, tugging at the pearl of my necklace. The captain was still in his cabin, but Kashmir was trimming the sails.
"A little help, Amira?"
Side by side, we cleared the deck, as we did before any navigation, or attempted navigation. As I worked, it was easy to forget. But after we finished securing the boom, we had nothing left to do but wait. I stood in the meager shade of the mast. The wind from the south toyed with my hair and made the sea shimmer. It was foolish to worry, I told myself. The map wouldn't work, no matter what my father believed. Then the door to the captain's cabin creaked open, and he emerged. I stood up straight as Bee stepped aside and Slate took the wheel, staring out over the bow. I stared, too, watching for fog and seeing none. My hand returned to the pearl at my throat. Kashmir elbowed me, and I choked out a sound like a laugh. I elbowed him back, so glad he was near, because in the back of my mind, I did not doubt the map after all.
"So what do you think? Combien de temps jusqu'à ce qu'il renonce?"
Cash said, glancing at Slate.
How long until he gives up?
Kashmir had come to the ship with a solid grasp of a handful of languages. I had taught him how to read, and in return, he'd taught me French, so he could make private jokes in public.
Des jours? Des semaines?
Oh, weeks, definitely, I answered with forced levity. He'll stare at the horizon until he drops, then wake up and try again tomorrow. We're in for a long wait.
Ah, well?
Cash folded his arms and looked over the rail into the water. It was a deep jade, a shade darker than his eyes.
Radka tells me you can catch lobsters here.
He told me, too. He's very excited.
He's always excited when it comes to food,
Cash said. Can you blame him? He was a monk before he was a cook.
Speaking of food, are you hungry for breakfast? There's cold pizza in the galley. Unless Ratgut's eaten it all.
I laughed. Not yet, but I'm glad we're stocked up in case he has us drifting for. I turned to point my chin at the captain and saw his eyes. They were far away and focused on something else. Something on the horizon. Something the rest of us couldn't see. The words lodged in my throat as I followed his gaze. The fog had come just off the bow, pale and shimmering like organza. Behind us, New York's hazy coast had evaporated like dew. For a moment, the whole world was still, and my blood rushed loud in my ears. Then the wind picked up again, in a different direction, twisting my curls past my face and bringing a new scent. Sweet as milk after the briny breeze that raced along the shores of Long Island. The mist was melting away as quickly as it had appeared, revealing a wide sea the color of cobalt. The map had worked. Chapter 7 My thoughts scattered like chipped ice, and my vision blackened at the edges, as though I was staring through a spyglass. For a moment, I thought the Pacific Ocean would be the last thing I ever saw. Then warm hands gripped my arms, and I sagged against Kashmir's chest, my breath burning in my lungs.
Amira?
He lifted my chin, and I focused on his eyes, seeing fear there for the first time since the day he'd come aboard. I'm fine. I locked my knees and pushed against him, trying to find my footing. Then I ran my hands over my arms as if to reassure myself I was still here. I'm fine.
Land to starboard!
Ratgut called from his perch.
Steamer aways, aft!
I dragged in a gulp of air and shaded my eyes. I could barely make out a smudge of lead gray that would, within a few hours, resolve itself into a string of islands, as Ratgut had said, away off starboard, the one place and time in the world I didn't want to visit. It had been so easy, almost as if we were welcome here.
Make ready,
Bea reminded us as she hauled at the halyard, raising our sails. The Temptation creaked as she swung around and caught the following wind. Right, I said aloud, as much to shake myself into action as to answer her. 19th century, running lights. The thoughts were coming slow, but they were coming. By 1850, both the United States and the United Kingdom had mandated colored signal lamps aboard ships. We were along a major shipping route, after all. The steamship puffing away south and east of our position was not the only other ship we'd see today. I lurched into motion, my legs like wood, fetching the lamps we'd removed for our trip to Calcutta. Too modern for that era. The red and green glass for port and starboard sides, as well as the clear white lamps for the top of the mainmast and the tip of the bowsprit. I handed three of the four off to Cash, who climbed the mast and ran the lanterns out to the ends of the yards. I took the one for the prow, clipped it to the rope, and hoisted it out over the water, where it led the way to the island where I was born, or would be born, or would have been born, depending, of course, on the map. As we approached, Oahu opened her arms as if to crush the vessels gathered before her into an embrace. Schooners and trawlers, cargo ships wallowing in the water, American gunners sullen as threats, and canoes darting among them like swallows. Above the waterline, volcanic peaks caught the clouds in their black teeth, their sides riven by emerald valleys sown with silver waterfalls. In the east, the crater of Diamond Head blazed scarlet in the sun. What would we find? Was Lian waiting for Slate's return, scarcely half a year gone by, while he had journeyed longer than Ulysses had to come back home? Was this the end of my father's odyssey? And if it was, where did that leave me? Cast adrift? Set free? Or dragged below the water? But our arrival hadn't erased me. It might be possible for two versions of the same person to coexist. One who knew the thrill of adventure, and another who knew only the comfort of home. Briefly, incongruously, my mind conjured up an idea I hadn't envisioned in a long time. A mother. I imagined her arms around me, cool and soft, the opposite of my father's fierce embraces. She was his harbor. Could she be mine as well? I shook my head. Of all the tales I believed, this was somehow the most implausible. I would be a stranger to Lian. How would Slate even introduce me, at 16, to her, still pregnant and barely half again my age? And how would he explain the long years he'd lived without her, mapped so clearly on his face? Although now, within sight of paradise, some of that time had fallen away. Glowing with anticipation, Slate handed off the wheel to Bee and bounded to the prow. His eager eyes roved the shore, as if for a glimpse of Lian herself. But then, within half a mile of the harbor, his hope crumbled, his face fell, and my own treacherous heart rose. He flung himself back from the rail, his hand over his face, as though blinded or weeping. As we approached the island, the captain brought the birdcage out on deck. He removed the hood, and the Caladrius blinked, her eyes black as polished pebbles. My protests rose and then died in my throat as the captain lifted the bird gently toward the sky. She cocked her head, taking in the water, the land before us, even my face. But she did not look at the captain before she beat her white wings and leaped into the air. He watched until she was a bright speck against the Emerald Isle, before he turned away once more. I reached for his arm, but he shook me off like I was a stranger in the street, and went back to his cabin. The locks clicked into place behind him. Pity mingled with relief and made me feel seasick. I picked up the empty birdcage and crushed it into sticks, tossing it piece by piece into the waves as I scanned the shore. What had he seen from so far away? Was it the steamships in the harbor? No, they'd been in Hawaii since the 1830s. The town by the beach? Or there, the steeple of Kawaiaho Church? But no, the church was finished in 1842.
Qu'est-ce que c'est?
Kashmir asked.
What are you staring at?
I half raised my hand as I studied the scene, trying to see through my father's eyes. There were flags on Iolani Palace, flying at half-mast. Was there anyone Slate might have known enough about to match their deaths to a date? Then I let my hand fall. It wasn't the black flags flying over the palace that he'd noticed, but the palace itself. Iolani Palace didn't exist in 1868, I said. We're quite late. In spite of my relief, the idea was galling. How was it possible? A date was the most basic anchor on a map. All good maps had anchors, something setting the map in the right place and the right time. Iolani Palace, for example. I remembered it now, labeled on the page, but I hadn't really seen it. I had been too focused on the date. I could have saved myself the worry if I'd only checked more closely. But who drew a map and misdated it? Kashmir shook his head.
So is the map broken, or the captain?